Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, it's Friday. It's the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
How are you doing, Mr. Gill?
I am so fantastic that I'll play a little kazoo rendition for you. I'm so very, very excited because it is Friday, baby. Yeah.
I think the noise cancelling, the noise gate that we have equipped didn't. You just, I'm going to play a kazoo thing and it just went, and then that was it.
That's pretty much it. What a kazoo is, though, to be fair. But it is time for the UBP. And what does that mean, Scott? What do we do on this show?
Means it's the Untitled Banter Podcast where we ask people for whatever they'd like us to talk about. And we got some music questions this week, as long as some TV stuff, gaming stuff.
Spicy. What,
gaming's the main thing, but
salty.
Whatever you guys would like us to talk about, whether it is salty stuff, food stuff, veggie things, or whatever it is, and we'll get to as many questions as possible. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
This is the Untitled Banter Podcast. I think I said that, but first question is from Jack Asbury. He says, "Hi lads, I know it's been talked about to death, but I'm nearly finished Elden Ring, and I want to know which boss gave you the most trouble and which one gave you the least trouble. Also, Andy Taylor said favorite boss was Radahn, hardest was Melania, and least favorite was the Elden Beast." Now, Elden Ring feels like it was such a time. Like,
I know,
it feels like,
right?
You know, now it's like May, we're about to hit June, and I feel like the first, I don't know, like February, well, I guess it'd be March and April were just dominated by Elden Ring. But when you think back on it, do you have bosses that stand out?
Oh, 100%, man. There are a few bosses that are still stuck in my craw, because every time that I've gone back through on New Game Pluses and with different characters, it's the Godskin Apostle and his ridiculously rotund mate.
The Ornstein and Smile of Elden Ring.
Like, this is the thing. I love the fact that FromSoft, much like with patches, always includes references to itself in some form. And having this sort of not so subtle reference of being Ornstein and Smough, it's lovely to battle against them. But that first moment when you meet up with them and it's like, oh, if you hadn't gone and found the separate bosses and fought them exclusively, then that boss fight is a nightmare. Like, I remember going up all the way to the secret tower, climbing up the stuff and all the way down in the inside bit and fighting the Godskin Apostle. And I was like, oh, you're hard enough on your own to deal with. And I fought Large Lad when he was on the bridge. And I was like, okay, well, to be honest, I kind of cheesed the Large Lad. I'm not going to lie. You know when he does that like super roly-poly jam move that he does?
Oh, you just get...
Yeah, I get him stuck in the animation on horseback. Yes. Just draw him into that. And then just whack away at him. And it's just you're done, mate.
Like behind a pillar, and I was like, well, it can't get to me, and you can jump up on the pillar and just hit it from there.
Yeah.
But a lot of the splash damage and the hitboxes are a nightmare for that thing, because it's such a weird, elasticated boss anyway.
So I just abused that until he went into his second form, but fighting them together was just, I had to summon help for it, because I was just like, I can't be dealing with both of you at the same time. I need one of you to be distracted so I can just focus fire.
We talked about summoning and stuff in like previous questions, previous UBPs, because I love summoning in the Souls games, and especially in Elden Ring, especially if you just drop into some random little dungeon crawl like across Nokron or whatever. And so I, by that point in the game, like I'd fought the optional version of that, so when they turned up in the main path, I was like, I can't fight you again, like just whatever. I'll just call someone in, let's just defeat them. Still took me a few tries, but like, yeah, I was ready for that game to be done when I was hitting those bosses.
What was your hardest boss?
oh my god, maybe the fire giant.
Oh, I hate just because the fire giant. That thing,
it's because its hitboxes are so stupid. Like its toe killed me. Like I would get it down to a smidgen of health. I realized as well that because I hadn't done all the separate exploratory stuff, I had like Josh was like 120 hours in when he got to the fire giant, so he like stood a chance. His attacks did enough damage where he could sort of like survive in that boss fight and then actually beat it. Whereas I got there way too early and I was just like chip damaging it all the way down to like a centimeter of health, and then it would roll over and its foot would just touch me and kill me in one hit.
Yep.
Any little thing it did would kill me in one hit. And so the thing I died the most to probably was the fire giant. Funnily enough, I did Malenia a second time. I was summoning, but I will always say that I drew the most aggro in that fight. I always feel like there needs to be this gamer metal thing of like, no guys, I did beat it. Even though I do love summoning, but yeah, Malenia, I absolutely loved fighting, but the one that killed me just 100 times was the fire giant, but I was way under leveled for it. And the game was telling me, go do something else.
Yeah, you're not
but
ready,
I was just
mate.
Like, no, in my head, I was like, no, the credits must be around here. I've been fighting for ages. Yeah. I'm on a mountain. It's got to be the end. But no, it was not. Do you have any that you are like loving in terms of the lore and stuff? Because I was getting lost in the lore, but I've not kept up with it.
I tell you what, thanks to good old Vartividia, he explored the cut content of Elden Ring. And it's a video that I fully recommend that people go and watch if you're even remotely interested into this game, because it's fascinating. And he turned out that there was a secret quest line for the Mimic Tear. And what it is like there's a being that you can ingest inside your body who wants like a host to live with, because it's like this lends you its power and it's scared of death, so it wants to bond onto your spirit. And what it is you get down into the underground layer, you know, when the world just opens up and you realize there's another land underneath the ground. And when you are sent to look for these chalices, you find them and it splits away from you. And by doing that, it basically, it turns into the Mimic Tear boss fight.
Right.
So that means that you end up
fighting.
It would
have learned all your stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
To that point,
and it makes more sense. So I was like, if that was still in the game, then the Mimic Tear actually has some of the most interesting lore around it, because it's a good story.
That thing would like broke the game. Like I didn't get them. I didn't get the Mimic Tear. That was one of the last things I picked up. Like I was like 140 hours in when I was mopping up the entire map, and then I finally found the Mimic Tear, and then kicked myself that I'd walked past it when I like went through that level in the first place. But that, considering that thing nigh on breaks the game anyway, like they almost should have left that quest in, because it is one of the most powerful summons that you can get. But yeah, Malenia, like I said, did it second time. I love the lore, the visuals of Malenia. I love that she just reminds me of Sephiroth,
sort of the bloom,
being sort of nature. Flower, like toxic poison, and it's like she's mastered it, and she has this insane, it's like the rot, the scarlet rot, and she's the source of it. And when you go down to that boss area, it's like just this incredibly gorgeous place. I loved Rykard as well, the big snake guy.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
He's like, join us in family. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, I love those things. I thought that, who's the dude? It's either Godfrey, Godric, or the other god.
Yeah.
But the one who has the big tiger lion thing over his shoulder.
Oh, yes. I know.
And he like becomes one with it, and you have that really cool fight with him. And there's like the Horrorloo fight as well, where it's like the real version of him that was like, you know, off wandering the wasteland and everything. I did have Elden Ring's lore memorized for like a week, and I was just, it's not there anymore. It was there. I did a tweet about it because I was like, oh, okay, so this. But since then, it's kind of dropped off. But I'm assuming they'll bring like maybe greater clarity, or at least more wrinkles to the lore when they do the DLC, because a lot of people are assuming all the star stuff is going to get brought in, because there's a lot of like mention of what happened in the stars and the different dragon lords and everything. So there's a lot more to plug in.
Like I say, with the amount of cut content that they already had for the base game, they could even just draw on some of that, make that into a DLC, and that is an amazing amount of content that's going to be dropped back in.
Who did you enjoy fighting? Who did you round this off with positive fights? Who did you? Who was the, I don't know, the Artorias of the Abyss of Elden Ring?
For me, Radahn, I love that fight. It's just so cinematic
I'd
and amazing.
Say Radahn, actually,
and like even the little moments and touches, like when you summon in Patches, he immediately runs away because he's like, no thanks, mate, I'm not having any of this. And I'm like, oh, that's actually a really clever touch that they made his cowardice an actual facet of this battle.
I loved summoning the jar guy, and when you all run in and you summon everyone around you, and it's like, it is like a raid boss.
It feels amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's like the spectacle of it. It's just that thing where he flies up and comes back down as the meteor. Again, splash damage, hitboxes. That's a lot of people died to that thing. But Radahn was one of the, any boss that I, that was hard and then beat and then summoned back in to get other people over the finish line. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my favorite thing to do in any Souls game. Next question from L4 Oliver, who says, with the mass cancellation of Xbox Game Pass, delays of Starfield and the other one, means Redfall, and the Halo TV show compared to the new Sony shows in development and the new PlayStation Plus, has Xbox already lost the battle of this generation?
Oh, this whole battle thing going back and forth. To be fair, it actually does feel more like a battle than ever, what with the purchasing of different studios and the fact that they're both moving on to the pay per month services like that. Before it felt like they were just two companies doing very different things, but now they are converging on one point, which is casual subscription market, effectively.
Yeah, and like when you line up, like you said, I mean, the Halo TV show, that's an absolute mess. It's not, I don't hate it.
I won't lie, I haven't watched it, but I've not heard good things.
You're not missing out. It's not really worth talking about. It's a mess. But there are some cool ideas in there that barely get fleshed out. But yeah, in terms of that stuff, it is kind of interesting that Sony are also kind of going like, we're going to do a God of War TV show and we're going to do a Horizon TV show. Yeah. And try and sort of match the potential of Xbox picking more IP out of their closet. But they don't have that much to pick from, unless they do like a Fable fantasy show or something.
Yeah.
Like a Sea of Thieves show, maybe.
They kind of went a very different route, didn't they? Because it was like, while Sony focused on getting as many mascots, you would call them, or like identifiable characters, Microsoft just doubled down on the 1 and 2 that they had. I mean, they could do Gears of War thing that could do very well.
Finally get Batista in to be Marcus Phoenix.
I mean, that definitely sounds like something I would watch if they turn that into a gritty, what's it called? Brothers. What's it called?
Like a Brothers in Arms.
Yeah,
type thing.
That would be amazing if they did something like that.
Yeah, if they get the tone right, it'd be sweet. I don't know, like with any sort of like video game TV show, I just don't have faith in it. Like, it's like, if you're going to do a Horizon show, I already think you're going to mess up the dinosaurs. Like, I doubt you're going to do practical, like actually build them, like, and actually do like proper robots and stuff. I think it'll be crappy CG and it'll look overly clean.
You never get enough budget to make those things look good. Like, even when you're looking at all of the Marvel stuff that they've done since Disney bought them, like the CGI there is very good for TV, but it's always the TV addendum. Mm-hmm. Like, so,
well, that's always the thing, and it's like a lot that has dogged a lot of the Disney shows, the Marvel shows. Like, there's still not really been one where it's like, oh my god, look at this. And apparently the new Obi-Wan is like, it doesn't have great compositing either. It looks I think it was on Deadline, they were saying it looks like a 90s throwback with lots of green screen stuff.
No.
But whatever. But yeah, in terms of the Xbox stuff, I think where they are is fascinating. I do, as someone who's been with us since the beginning, loved the Xbox, the 360, had every Xbox, even had an Xbox One, and now the series systems, I am just a bit like gutted that they don't have a first party lineup. I know they have so many studios under their wing, and I think all those things are coming, but it is weird that we're sort of like, we're 2 years into the generation, or they've had arguably the entire last generation to play catch up and plan everything, and what they've planned is Game Pass and the thing that leaked last night, which was a USB dongle for a TV, so you can get Game Pass and play it through your TV.
Now that is a great idea. It's very interesting, that.
It's awesome, but what games though? Like, it's the great little collections of monthly stuff. That's what the Game Pass back and forth thing was. People going like, well, what am I paying for?
So people are saying about like the mass cancellations of Game Pass. Is that actually like quite a significant drop off?
I think reports of that might have been greatly exaggerated. It definitely started with the Washington Post's Gene Park saying that he was getting sick of it and giving up on it. And then there was a lot of other people. There was like Tom's Guide's Tony Polanco weighed in, Kind of Funny's Paris weighed in. There was a lot of like blue ticky people going like, yeah, I'm also checking
it
out.
What don't they like about it? Is it the fact that it's just not as supported in terms of like patches and stuff like that on PC?
New stuff. Like, it's sort of like I'm paying, like if they were in the UK, it's £11. So it's like I'm paying £11 a month for what? And it's like, well, you get, for me, I think it's unbelievable value for money.
Yeah,
like,
I'm still playing through half of the games that have just come out. Like, I've only just downloaded the Total Warhammer 3, which came out that, but it's just the fact that it's on there and I don't have to shell out 50, 60 quid for it. I'm very happy.
Well, I was playing Sniper Elite 5 last night and I love Trek to Yomi. Like, for me, there's always about two or three games in there that justify the price, because even one individual game would probably be a tenner anyway.
Yep.
So I always think they're incredible value for money, but a lot of the conversation came down to, well, where are the first party games? Like, where are the big sort of exclusives? And then people brought up, I think it was was, well, it was mentioned by Gene Park, but people brought up this quote from Xbox back when Game Pass launched or refined itself in June in 2021, which was Xbox saying, we'll have an exclusive every 3 months. And they obviously haven't.
Okay.
They're not even close to that. So, like, I think it's phenomenal value for money. I actually suggest people get a Series S in Game Pass if you're just new to gaming. But I guess I can see the argument that they don't have the first-party lineup, which is something that PlayStation will have when their service launches, even though they won't have new games on there. They are adding all their entire library on there for the same similar monthly fee. So yeah, it was a lot of that. It was just like, oh my God, I'm paying a monthly fee just for a bunch of indies or just for a bunch of games that aren't AAA exclusives. But that's not why I game. I'm not only focusing on them, even though I do think it's weird and deflating that they don't have that lineup. I think that is a bit disappointing.
I mean, we might be having a very different conversation in about a year's time when the Bethesda deal really kicks into high gear, when we start seeing other things sort of say, hey, look, maybe we are going to have timed exclusives. Maybe we are going to have just exclusive event stuff for the new Doom, or we're going to have DLC that only comes out on that. Because we discussed this before about whether or not we thought that some of the Bethesda lineups or the acquisitions that they had would go completely first party. And we both said,
I think they will eventually, in a roundabout way,
yes, but it would be silly for them to do it straight away because they cut out a huge portion of their market, which is obviously going to be a huge revenue source. And to be fair, with the cost of that acquisition, they're going to need to make their money back however they can. So we never actually discussed the option that they could do, which is, yes, it's going to be on every platform, but the DLCs, the event stuff, may be exclusive to Xbox players. So you might...
Maybe, I mean...
They did that. We did that with... do you remember when Dead Rising 3 came out? They had the DLC packs that allowed you to play all of the characters up until the point that they meet Nick. But then they brought out the... What was the really elongated name that it was? Like Dead Rising 3 Alpha Turbo Hyper Mega Edition. Remember that? That was exclusive.
The Capcom Self-Aware Edition.
Yeah, that was the Xbox exclusive, and it's never been seen in anything else. Now, who's to say that they wouldn't do something like that? Give a package or a collection that is Xbox or PC exclusive? Like,
well, for the longest time, because it was always like games play best on PlayStation or whatever. But yeah, they can absolutely say, you know, yes, you get the base version over on PlayStation.
Oh, that would be such a way to stick it to them. If they actually took that and said, like, oh, games play better on PlayStation. Ah, but you're playing the vanilla experience, my friend.
They go, and look at all these premium editions, look at all these deluxe things, which you would get ad gratis if you just paid your monthly fee. The thing I think they're going to do, which it'll get very spicy very quickly, is I think they will offer the Game Pass system, the streaming, xCloud, whatever, on PlayStation and Nintendo. And if, like, and either they'll force that app onto the dashboard, or it'll be, you know, it'll just be the case of, if you want to play Doom, Elder Scrolls, Fallout, whatever, they are Game Pass exclusive. And I think that, that'll be a phrase that starts coming out, and that'll be offered to Sony. It's like, well, if you want them on your console, you're going to have to stream them through our app. We have to make them available that way, and that's how they remind PlayStation owners that Xbox exists and that kind of thing. So that's my assumption.
Have you been reading about this thing as well, where it's like how it's quite a worrying thing actually that they're looking to incentivize the Game Pass in ways that are like almost like a battle pass system? So it's like, have you downloaded 5 new titles this month? Here's a skin for one of the games. How many hours have you clocked on in total on Game Pass games? Here's a skin. I'm like, ooh, that's getting into the grindy nature of paying.
The thing. Yeah, if it feels like a lifestyle choice where it's that thing where every game is trying to take up as much of your personal time as possible, then
gamifying owning your own library. I don't know about that.
I don't mind if it feels natural, because I'm someone who plays like as many games as possible anyway. So if there's something that ties into that, that just sort of like says, like, hey, by the way, we've realized you live the Big Dip life. Here's 10 skins or something.
Yeah, but imagine
that would happen anyway.
Imagine the exploitation of FOMO. It's like, oh, here's the flaming skull variant of that amazing Halo armor that everyone wants. And you can only get it if you have played, like downloaded this or gotten a friend to download Halo, the new pack or something like that. Like,
I guess part of me hopes they would do the best thing with it and use it to boost sort of you know, like visibility of tiny little games, like indie games or something, or like put them in a bundle and say you should at least play the first few levels of this if you really want that extra thing. But then that, I guess, whatever that thing is has to be optional so it doesn't feel too forced. I just hope that, for me, the best thing about Game Pass is visibility on games I wouldn't have played anyway or people might not have played anyway, and so I hope they find a way to bring that together. But to bring it back to Alphar's question, I don't think Xbox has lost the battle or anything. The Xbox Xbox Series S actually outsold the PS5 in Japan. I think it was last month or for the majority of this month. So I think they're getting there. It's just that they're playing different games. Like Xbox is playing for the living room. They're playing for the mainstream audience. Phil Spencer said years ago that their main competition was Amazon and Google. So I think that's what they're going for. And that doesn't really interest me as much because it is a big, wider mainstream pull. Mm-hmm. And I do want those exclusives and reasons to invest in a console. But hopefully they will come too. It's just that, weirdly, it's taking forever. It's taken them like a generation and a half to sort of assemble some first-party stuff. So, no, I don't think they've lost, but they're just playing different games.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it goes. Next question from Attack on Pixels. First of all, wish you are all in good health and doing well. That must be aimed at Mr. Jules.
Yeah, I'm all doing very well. Thank you very much.
He is. Question is, are the days of hyping a game gone? I can't remember the last time I was genuinely hyped for a game like I used to be back in the Halo 3 days. Is this due to live services, subscriptions, etc.? This is interesting because I tend to think of this too. I wonder whether the average person is just too jaded with the launch state of games. Like, yeah. You know, when was the last time a game launched and it was a brilliant launch? Like, 9 times out of 10, it's buggy, the servers are down at midnight, the better version comes out a week later, and we've had massive No Man's Sky, Cyberpunk 2077, like, mm-hmm. these big titles that didn't only just fail, but they, like, face-planted the floor and then kept nutting the floor because they just couldn't get up again. And so I wonder if the average consumer has just gone, I'm going to wait and just see what it's like.
Well, you say that, but pre-orders and exclusive bonus stuff that you get for day one purchasing or day zero purchasing, they are still absolutely rife. And there are still companies that will trade exclusively on that because they're just like, we need to make back this money as quickly as possible. I think is something that is still exploited regularly.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But I have to admit, because of the fact we entered the, let's call it the reset phase, but you'd otherwise call it the drought caused by the big vid, we're now getting games that are back that are starting to use hype again. We did go for effectively 2 years without any hype whatsoever.
True.
And now we're on the other side of things. It definitely feels like, for example, Elden Ring. That was incredibly hype because it was the first big meaty game to come out of the back end of the vid.
That's actually a good one that nailed its hype as well. Actually did capitalize, did actually manage to surpass the hype and was incredibly impressive, like, you know, over hours and hours and hours.
But they did it in a way that was, you knew Elden Ring was coming out, but the marketing for it didn't really start kicking into high gear until it was maybe about a month or two away from actual release. The problem that so many games have are like, hey, look, we're announcing the title. People go mad. Then we announce the release date. Okay, they've gone mad again. Then they announce this. And then by the time that it actually comes out, you could be looking for like a year and a half between those 2 points. And the game, it might be great, but it's either going to face a massive backlash of not living up to the hype that was created by a year and a half of marketing ploys, or it's going to just be like, oh, I'm so tired of thinking about this game. I'll play it when it's ready sort of thing. Like, you
well,
just,
plus,
like,
I mean, the marketing spin, the marketing departments, they run so much faster than game dev, and they might have advertised a feature that is now being scrapped later on because some part of the game engine doesn't work with that thing anymore, or that level's been gutted out or anything. One thing I think that we lack, this is potentially a bit of a tangent, but I don't think the industry prioritizes storytelling anywhere near as much as it used to. Like, Halo 3 was a huge deal because it was the close of a trilogy and we were all following it. And when I played through the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, I was like, oh my God, I forgot what it felt like to go on like a saga, but like a trilogy. And capitalize on it, the ebbs and flows and all the different shared fan theories and bringing all those things together. We don't really have that. Like, we had like Horizon Forbidden West sort of like came and went almost because of Elden Ring, but even then the Horizon mythos isn't really hotly debated. People weren't actively looking forward to the next story side of Horizon, and it's like, you know, we have God of War Part 2 coming up, which I think is quite muted by the fact that it's on PS4 as well, but like, hopefully you can get, I miss those big sort of saga feels. Like, Halo had that, Mass Effect had that. You know, I miss it.
A good example would be, strangely enough, Saints Row, because the new game that's coming out isn't focusing on story, isn't focusing on anything. You don't even see narrative pop-ups in any of
Gat is nowhere to be found.
There's nothing to incite you to pick up that game for the story. It's just going, hey, wacky memes, blah, 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 explosions. Now,
I think loads of games have the open world version of that too, like Dying Light 2 or Anthem or whatever it is.
But if you scale back a bit and you look at how Saints Row 3 and 4 were marketed, they still pushed the story mode quite heavily, but it was then accompanied by the over-the-top violence and silliness. Like, it was always like, hey, look, there is a reason to play this game rather than just, hey, wacky fun explosion simulator.
Yeah, and it's like, you can do, like, I love Saints 3. It's one of my favorite games, but it's like, yeah, those things are, there's like good writing in there. There's like a funny script. There's like things that tie the set pieces together. It's
Whereas
not
this,
just
like new Saints Row game, it literally for me just goes, right, okay, I'm going to be bored after about 15 minutes because you are either showing me everything I can do in the trailers and you're kind of just worried almost that there is no substance behind this game.
Yeah, I think the industry has a massive problem with bloat and just sort of like, like you're doing the same thing after 30 hours as you were after 30 minutes or 3 minutes. It just massively gets in the way of everything.
Another good example is Gotham Knights. I know that it sounds like you and I keep dunking on this game, but it's not because of the fact that we want this game to fail. Far from it. I want this to be the next best Batman game since the last one. But it's a case of every single time that I'm looking at gameplay demos, every single time I'm looking at any sort of marketing around this game, the narrative seems to be in the back seat. It's just like, hey, look, this is how the game plays. Hey, look, this is what you can do. And it's like, I need to see a reason, because at the moment these bullet spongy enemies and just doing like the thwippy flippy shoot you young buck style thing, it's not doing it for me at the moment.
Well, it's like defend this point against waves of enemies. No, why would I ever, why, unless that point means something, I don't care. Like that whole thing as well, Gotham Knights is a perfect example because that game's story is, like you said, on the back foot, but also it's weirdly meshed in with the Arkham verse. Like it's sort of like Bruce Wayne's dead and we're sort of doing stuff after that, but it's not actually an Arkham game, but we are pivoting off that
plot trading on it, basically.
You're trading on it. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, like you contrast to how much we cared about Arkham City and Arkham Knight and even Arkham Origins, even if people didn't like it, at least they cared about it. I just like, yeah, I feel like storytelling and characterization and like through line narratives take a massive backseat to here's a bunch of stuff to do for 30 hours and it doesn't land. Like, they're not memorable.
Embrace the grind.
There's like games that I don't mind grinding on, but it's like they're rare. They're just so, that was like a tangent thing, but I just feel like the industry drops the ball on story stuff. And that's one thing that I, in terms of hype, I think that's one of the reasons why hype has gone away to that degree, because we're not all waiting for a story to be concluded or anything. But next question from TJ, who says, thoughts on We Came As Romans. Also, what is the best video game economy exploit? We Came As Romans, I never used to listen to, but their new song or newish song, Black Hole, I love that song. That's like one of three songs I know by them.
They completely bypassed me because I was, I think I was coming out of the scene for a bit as they were coming into it. I think that they launched kind of, I don't know when it would have been in my life, what age I would have been, but I just remember seeing it and being like, oh, okay, this is like the next step into the screamo, hardcore, like whatever variant we're calling this nowadays. And I was just like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this now for a bit.
Well, I don't know if it's their name, but for whatever, maybe I got them confused with someone else. For the longest time, literally until, I don't know, last year, I thought they were an indie band. I don't know why.
It does sound a little bit like that,
just, you know, they just trotted in. I was just like, oh, it sounded like a folk thing or something. Yeah. And then I listened to Black Hole and I was like, oh no, it's like bouncy and cool. It's got a cool riff and like, yeah, it's got a big screamy chorus. And I love Dark Bloom and Black Hole and whatever the other new one is, Daggers or something. There's like three new songs that I think are cool, but I don't know the rest of them. Like I said, for 30 years of my life, I thought that they were a little tootly band.
I think it was mainly because of the fact that they entered I saw that the genre of just heavy music in general entering like hyperbole core, where basically every band was looking at what had been done before and being like, let's just add more notes in here. Let's just, can we make this note any lower? Can we just go that one step further than that? And it's like, I maybe realized my own age at that point where I was just like, it's just not for me yet. I've come back to it, and I do appreciate a lot of heavy and black metal and death metal now. Like I've gotten a real sort of taste for. And it's like back at that point, I just didn't have the palette for it.
Speaking of black metal, the new Mahiphy solo album, Rashomon.
It's very dark, isn't it?
That thing is huge. Yeah. That thing is like monolithic. Like it feels like it's just invading all sound space around you. Massive shout out to that.
That's a weird album as well because of the fact that I never felt like Trivium were restrained. I always felt like they just always had like a different vision and they pushed out for that. I'm not going to say that I liked everything that they put out. Like I know this splits opinion, but I didn't like Crusade where they were just like, hey, we're Metallica
now. I think everyone hated Crusade.
It's just like, hey. And then it was like they went through their Japanese phase where they were like, oh, look. Shogun. And it's like, I love that a band keeps trying to evolve and do that. But when you hear Matt Heafy's solo stuff, you're like, oh man, there's something in that group that's stopping them from pushing specific like points of metal that allows that he's just free to do.
Yeah, they were so young. Like they were figuring it out as they went. And like, yeah, they were so young. Okay, is this what we're supposed to be? Okay, because they said back in the day when the Crusade came out that they were such fans of Metallica and they were like, oh, all the bands that we listened to growing up didn't sound like screamy stuff, so we'll do something like that. And then, the Japanese stuff and embracing that was Heafy sort of looking into his own heritage.
Yep.
And like, okay. I love this stuff. And then, Shogun, I think, is their masterpiece. But, like, I mean, Trivium, one of my favorite bands. So, like, I, like, love their trajectory. But it's interesting where they are now with Heafy just saying that he got really into black metal across the last few years and then has been able to do this really brutal, gruesome, like, all-encompassing, sonically heavy thing, which is entirely sort of Japanese-themed. Like, it's called Rashomon, and it has all these different sort of narrative elements to it. I just think that's incredibly impressive. Obviously, black metal is a massive acquired taste, so don't go into it if you've been listening to, I don't know, Rina Sawayama, even though I'd massively recommend her new song too, but still.
It's so weird as well, like the whole sort of like death and black metal scenes, because there are some bands that are heavy because they infuse a lot of doom into it, where it's slow and oppressive.
Sludgy.
And then you've got the other side, which is like, you know, it sounds like it was recorded in a phone booth and it's like somebody's like screaming down the phone at you sort of thing. Like it's very, almost like aggressively bad production.
Black Breath was like that.
Yeah, it's very weird. But like I go from like listening to like Blind Guardian to like Satyricon, and they're both within the same genre, but they are not the same sound. Mm. And it's, I find that there are very few genres of hard rock, heavy metal, the heavier side of music that have as much divergence within the groups. I mean, I remember listening to Dimmy, I always pronounce this
Dimmy
wrong.
Dimmy Borgir.
And being like, what is this mess? And then a couple of years later, coming back to it and being like, I love this mess. Like,
well, I for Trivium, I came in on the Crusade album because I couldn't get away with Ember to Inferno or Ascendancy or whatever. So, that's too screamy. So I liked the Crusade because I was all like, oh, it's more palatable and easy. And then I hated Shogun because it was screamy again.
Yeah.
And so like that, all those things took me like an acquired taste. Because how do you find with screamy stuff? I was talking to my wife about this. I can work to the screamiest, most brutal stuff possible, because to me, it's a wall of sound. It's a cocoon. cocoon. I can work within that. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm kind of like inside that vortex or something. It blocks everything out.
Yeah.
It really works for me. And I like that a lot. Whereas she is like, there is no way I can form a cogent sentence when Mahifi or anyone is just screaming at me. But like, how do you find that that balance?
So there is like, there's a few genres of music that I work really well to. And it's actually one of the biggest pet peeves of my partner, Kerry, because of the fact that she said once that it was insulting to the artist that I use them as kind of white noise effectively to like work with. And I do agree with her on some level on that.
Because fall asleep to trivia.
Because it's not like I'm trying to diss them by listening to them while I'm doing something else. But it is that feeling and a vibe of it blocks out. It gives you tunnel vision in the best way because it allows you to focus. And I find that the genres that work the best for that for me are... I can get on with very repetitive house music that literally just puts me in the zone. I will listen to the heaviest, screamiest thing that I possibly can. And again, that blocks it out. But the one that I can't do it with is rap, because I always end up listening to the
driven.
Yeah, because I'm listening to the lyric and I'm like, that was clever. And I've lost my train of thought. That was really smart.
No, totally.
Like, that was funny. Like,
I go back to, this is the most me sentence ever, but I go back to old PlayStation demo disc music.
Oh, classic.
And it's like, give me old Namco soundtracks, give me old, like 2000s music game, like music game soundtracks, Tekken Tag soundtrack is the most nostalgic thing in the world. And then, then I realized on YouTube, people just uploaded all these demo discs.
Yeah, you just listen to the whole thing.
And I'm not listening to it like 24/7, but I put that on, it was like a few months back. I sent it to Josh. He was like, this is the most you thing in the world. I was like, this is the best music that was made at the time. It's like a window back into that portal. And finding out that the dude who did Tekken soundtracks, he's called, it's like spelled S-A-N-O-D-G,
okay.
Like Sanodg,
okay.
On Spotify. He has an album called Brightness. That composer is like phenomenal. Like if you want a window into early 2000s grooves, it's Namco sounds, it's that stuff.
Is that is your jam, is it?
I would massively recommend that stuff.
Well,
But yeah.
If another one is like that I can always listen to no matter what is anything by Hideki Naganuma, who did the Jet Set Radio soundtrack.
Oh,
like they are amazing. In fact, I'm pretty sure that...
Did they get that guy back for the remake?
I think that, the Bomb Rush Future or whatever it is. I'm pretty sure he did the...
Well, there's Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, but then Sega were like, oh, we're rebooting Crazy Taxi and Jet Set anyway. So I'm assuming that they're going to do it officially.
I mean, to be fair though, every game that he's worked on has been stonkingly good. We've got... so the one that he's released recently, which is for Bomb Rush... I can't remember what the name is.
Cyberpunk.
It's called Jack Da Funk. And then he also worked on Lethal League. And I don't know if you've ever played that.
Oh, yeah. Lethal League's got good music.
I tell you what, have you played Lethal League like recently? Have you?
No, I've listened to the soundtrack. I listen to soundtracks sometimes more than I've like played a game or instead of a game sometimes.
I love that game, man. It's like, it's Smash Brothers, but with baseball. And it's just like that one hit from that one ball will just KO you. I love it
There's one that I'm trying to think of that has the funkiest theme. And it's called something like Disco Ball Warriors or something.
Amazing.
I have to try and find it. It's Disco something. And that thing, because I was just in this like synthwave video game hole and then finding all sorts of different things, and I was like, I can't get to this game because it was on PC and it was on Steam, but it was great.
If you're looking for a good synthwave, I know that we're going off topic again, unsurprisingly, on the UBP.
We got through 1, 2, 3, 4 questions.
Oh, record, yes.
We flew.
You should check out the band LeBrock. They do kind of like 80s synthy stuff, and it's very emotional.
I've seen LeBrock live.
Oh, nice.
They were nice.
I was meant to go and see them, and then I twisted my ankle and I couldn't go.
Oh, no. I'm looking forward to getting back on synth gigs. That feels like the nice little, the underground music scene of the last few years. Everyone gets all dressed up with their neon jackets and everything. Let's end on a gaming question.
Sure thing. Makes sense considering the topic that we're meant to be on.
So this one is from that guy, Jim, who says, I've recently finished Gears of War 5 and found the ending to be very blah. Mm. What games have you played that you really enjoyed only for the ending to really disappoint you?
I mean, we have to address the elephant in the room. Mass Effect 3. I don't want to rehash something that is a dead conversation now, but
do you know what's insane? That's 10 years old.
I feel very old thinking about it. But yeah, it wasn't very satisfying. But then again, my biggest one, my all-time cannot believe how angry I got as a kid was, you know where I'm going with this, Scott?
Maybe.
What are you doing? Finishing the fight. Halo 2 cliffhanger ending.
I was
fuming. I played through that and was just like, I didn't get on with the story. I was just like, what is this absolute balls that you're talking about. There's Gravemind appears, the Arbiter's in, out. Are we friends? Yep. Are we enemies? Then the Gravemind comes in and basically just says, hey, look, the game was rushed, fellas, so the kind of continuity between levels didn't really work. So I'm just going to tell you what you need to do and you're just going to accept it because I'm this all-seeing, all-powerful thing. It's like, shouldn't we be trying to kill you? Yeah, but not yet.
One of the weirdest, unbelievable crunch stories is the reality of how Halo 2 was made. Like, that thing was ludicrous. I'm sure they turned the whole thing around in, 9 months.
I hate the fact that Microsoft just didn't give them the breathing room for it because it's like, we need to get the sequels out. And sequels come out every year, don't they? It's like, no, just chill. Chill
out.
Yeah,
I forget. There was a whole article. I'm not sure if it was Vanity Fair did it, but there's a lot of articles, a lot of documentation of what happened around that, the release of that game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they had to cut off the back third of the game, which would have been the big final set piece fight, and then transplanted across into Halo 3. And so, yeah, that thing is, fascinating. It's weird because when I was a kid playing Halo 2, I liked that ending because I was like, cool, it's Halo 2. I'm looking forward to 3. And I was so ensconced in the multiplayer that I just didn't mind. And then coming out of that and everyone saying, dude, that ending. And I was like, what do you mean? And every single person I've ever talked to hated it. That was, the thing. Mine would be by far Death Stranding because that was just the moment I lost all faith in Kojima.
We've talked many a time about how you came into work the next day and you were just like, I'm done. I don't even want to talk
about
it. I just
had to be like, well, I've invested in something that has now bottomed out and there's nothing here and Princess Peach and all that kind of thing. And you mean I to tell me I'm Mario and you're Princess Peach? Just
fuming. Fuming, no. I would have been.
It's a bad time. And so mine's massive. Mine personally would be that. But yeah, overall, though, massive thank you to everyone for sending in their questions. This has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP.
The UBP.
I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll catch you all next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.